There's a new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions called Morning Kick. It combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. All you do is mix with water, stir, and enjoy. It tastes like strawberry lemonade, not like ground-up spinach. Morning Kick is part of my daily routine. It's replaced orange juice in my life as the first place I go when I wake up. And since I've been drinking it, I've had better digestion and more energy. For me, that's important now that I have a newborn who, let's just say, doesn't always sleep like a baby. My health is important to me, just like it's important to you. I want to be the best version of myself spiritually, mentally, and physically. If you feel sluggish, it's worth giving Morning Kick a try. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/HARRIS today. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary. We are now live on the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. We have someone who's been on the podcast once before, Seth Gruber. Seth, how you doing?
Good, brother. Good to be with you, man.
So for those who don't know, Seth has a new documentary coming out. That's what we're actually going to be discussing, and a book, right? The 1619 Project. That's not your project. The 1916. You did that on purpose to trick people.
I did, yep.
So they're going to go looking for the 1619 Project, and they're going to find yours and think it's that. And then they're going to, I don't know what's going to happen at that point. But anyway.
Yeah, that's right. We got to figure out some of the SEO stuff, John, because right now, everyone that Googles the 1916 Project, Google pulls up the 1619 Project.
I noticed that.
So we got to flip it, and we got to figure out the SEO on Google so that people actually go to our webpage. But bro, it's good to be with you again. And thanks for having AJ Hurley on for that really fascinating debate the other day. That was super fun. AJ's my national coordinator of activism and honestly one of my dearest friends. And so we appreciate your voice, John.
Yeah, likewise. And if people want to check out the White Rose Resistance, where can they go?
Yeah, you can go to the whiterose.life. We actually just launched our brand new website right before the launch of the film screening tour that we're doing and the book. And so now, praise God, because of support like men from men like you, John, we're now the fastest growing pro-life organization in America. I can't hire fast enough. God's really blessed us. We're super,
really?
Super. Yeah. Last time I spoke with you, bro, I had one employee, I think,
I remember
when
that.
You had me on. I think we're at like 14 now.
Praise God.
And we have two or three more positions we need to hire for before the fall, full-time positions. And so now we've launched in Boise. We're launching in Denver this summer. We're launching in California in like 2 months. And we're launching in Fort Worth in the fall. And we're going to keep launching these White Rose chapters. We're hiring regional coordinators that we're interviewing for right now all around the country. We're a digital media activism organization, John. And so we're not in this just to feel good about expressing orthodox positions and making you feel more confident in your pro-life beliefs so you can lambast the culture of death and call them Baal worshipers. That's not why we're in this. We're in this to put ourselves out of a job, bro. I don't want to be doing this at 42 years old. I want to be rebuilding Christendom, not tearing down another high place. And so that's kind of the mantra that all of our teams say at the ministries. We're trying to put ourselves out of a job. We want the church getting back to doing what she should have been doing all along, saving children, stopping this Holocaust, ending abortion, rebuilding the family structure in America. Yes, that means contending politically, although we're not a 501c4, but it means contending culturally. It means that your church needs to be adopting this as an actual ministry. And so everything we do is to awaken, inspire, mobilize, and equip the church to get back involved in the culture of death, opposing that culture of death, and actually rebuilding a culture of life where they live. And so we do media, training, activism, courses, curriculum, films, documentaries, books, but it's also that you get clarity on why, what's happening in this country, how we got here, so that you'll live differently. Mm. And so that's who we are, bro. Yeah. And I appreciate all that you do to bring clarity to the abortion Holocaust, to the culture of death, and kind of how this happened.
Yeah, praise God. I didn't realize it was growing that fast. I know you're on Instagram, and I'm not a big Instagram guy. I probably should be because I hear that's where the cool kids are, right? So I have like 86 followers, and I post pictures of flowers and mountains sometimes. You know, it's not, I'm not really promoting myself much on it. But whenever I do go on it, I see your stuff, and it's got a lot of traction. And I thought, wow, like, I don't know what he's doing, but he's got some ingredients right, because there's just a lot of support and energy with what you're doing. So praise God for that. If people want to check it out, and look, people are looking for jobs right now. So you just said you had three jobs open. How cool would that be, right? Working to stop and end abortion. So I guess they can find out more about that at the website then,
or go to thewhiteroads.life, thewhiteroads.life. I think we just added those, and then you can also sign up for our email list, and we notify you all about that. And then at the end of the show, I'll tell you how you can actually kind of support the ministry and what we're doing to actually equip and mobilize our donors, because like I said, this is a ministry that was birthed by and for the church, John. And so I believe that if this is a Holocaust, giving $35 or $50 a month to a pro-life ministry is not all that a Christian should be doing, for goodness sakes. Like, yes, help equip the fighters, right? Maybe you're an insurance guy, you know, maybe you're a salesman. I don't know, maybe you work at Walmart. Like, obviously you can't just leave your job to provide for your children and try to start volunteering for a pro-life ministry and make no money. I get it. You may not be called full-time into the culture war. But if this is a Holocaust, we as a church need to do a lot more, John, than just giving a $20 a month gift to a ministry. Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot to equip and pour back into our donors to be the resistance, so that they're actually equipped to speak powerfully against the culture of death, understand the ideologies and events happening around us and how that kind of all happened, and really empowering them to be able to be persuasive, gracious. I'm starting to sound like Russell Moore over here, and bold voices to those in their lives who need the truth. And for too long, Christians have kept their opinions to themselves, and they didn't want to rustle any feathers at the workplace. And we are way, way past the point of comfortable Christianity in the culture.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And don't feel bad about sounding like Moore, because I think a lot of the things Russell Moore says are actually true. He just doesn't actually believe them.
That's right.
Yeah. We should be winsome. What does that mean? And then that means we like neutralize ourselves. And so, yeah, anyway. Here's the website for people who want to check it out. It's 1619, or sorry,
you did it
I keep
again.
Saying the wrong thing. The 1916project.com. The 1916project.com. And super spiffy website here. You can order the documentary. You could actually attend a screening or host a screening if you're a church or another organization. So first question here for you, Seth, because I've seen a lot of this from pro-life groups, various ones. I can't even like count, because there's so many different ones that have popped up. Some of them have gone away over the years. Sure. And it seems like one of the things that I often see is they have a documentary or some DVD that they're trying to get churches to promote. At least I know, because my dad's a pastor, he gets these things free sometimes. I'll just send them in the mail. Yeah. So what makes what you're doing different than some of the other exposés of Planned Parenthood that have been put out there before?
Yeah. So I touched on the answer to that question earlier, John, but let me repeat it, because it's really, really, really important. Okay. Unless the church flatulent becomes the church militant, it will become the church irrelevant. And by militant, I don't mean like picking up arms and going in to kill Democrats. Okay. No one's calling for that. Okay. I mean, as an analogy for militant in righteousness, right? Militant in your zeal for righteousness in the public square, and for being as unapologetic in accruing power for good as the other side does, John, to accrue power for a wicked agenda, right? But if you try to get power at the political level and you're a Christian and you're like, this is insane, we're lopping off the genitals of kids and we're murdering third trimester babies, then Rick Warren and David French call you a Christian nationalist, and Phil Vischer appears in Rob Reiner's new documentary. I mean, it's like, no, it's like, listen, as Bonhoeffer said, power is to serve responsibility. Okay, it's a beautiful line from Bonhoeffer. Power is to serve responsibility. Yes, we want to get power because we want to use it for good means, John, to stop this insanity that's happening. And so this ministry was birthed by and for the church. I guess what makes us different than some of the other ministries, which I'm not going to attack any ministries or name any names. I mean, these ministries do wonderful work to save a lot of babies. And if you're saving babies, you're doing some good work, even if there's other issues going on. But what makes us unique is that we're a ministry completely for the church. And now listen, I won't even hire someone as a W-2 employee that is not aligned with our statement of faith. We're actually a Christian organization, John. So I can actually hire and fire based off of the religious statement that you have to agree to and sign, and you would love it. It's like very good. And so that was important to me because I didn't want to have any mission drift, or I didn't want to have any plants that ended up getting in the organization and causing trouble. This has happened to a lot of ministries. So we are an unapologetic evangelical Protestant organization, John. But I'll work with Catholics. I'll work with pagan atheists if they're like, hey, let's save babies and stop abortion. But we are a ministry by and for the church. So everything we do, whether it's the films, the books, the curriculum, the courses, activism events in the public square, the call to action is host a screening of the film and launch a White Rose chapter in your city. So what we're doing with the growth of this film, John, that's already like we have hundreds of churches lining up for screenings, and we only launched 2 days ago, 3 days ago for the church tour that we're doing. So I'm doing 11 mega churches around the country. God doesn't care about numbers, but I have to prioritize the biggest opportunity. So I'm doing 11 big churches around the country starting 2 days ago, or Friday, June 5th, June 14th, through the end of August, all around the country. You can, if on that website, if you press attend a screening, you'll actually see my dates. But we've got hundreds of others now lining up to host it themselves at their own church. And we're going to have a White Rose rep at most of the screenings to invite people to join the White Rose Resistance as an ally at $35 a month. And that just helps fund the creation of documentaries and the creation of activism kits that we actually send donors so that they're equipped, all to start launching these chapters around the country. And so these chapters will be served by our national organization with the training and equipping to do activism, to do educational events in the public square. And this is a word the church has not been comfortable with, right, John? Activism, right? That's, I mean, years ago, you remember with Operation Rescue, a lot of churches didn't want to support some of the people that were engaging in civil disobedience because the church is not comfortable with activism. It doesn't, they thought it wasn't very Christ-like. It wasn't very nice, right, John? And so we're not calling for people to break the law. But we are calling for the church to get involved in activism events in the public square. We'll probably do undercover reporting. There's a lot of things we're building at White Rose Resistance, also that the church is pushing back against the culture of death and Planned Parenthood's agenda for both preborn and born children in the city and community that God's given them dominion. So I would say that's what makes us unique, bro. I actually won't even hire a Catholic as a W-2. We have a Catholic as a contractor. Like, I love my Catholic brothers and sisters, and I believe so many of them are saved, and they're doing good work. Yes, I believe some Catholics can be saved. Okay, guys. It doesn't mean they all are, just like not every Protestant who says they're a Protestant is saved. But we're going to work with these people, but we are an evangelical Protestant organization to get the church back engaged in the culture war, which was always a proxy war for a far deeper spiritual war.
Yeah. So here's a follow-up for that. So the documentary itself, I've heard for years in some of these other films and materials that have been put out there, Margaret Sanger, terrible person, right? To just summarize. and then there's a line that's usually like Nazi Germany and then today's Planned Parenthood and the Democrat Party, right? So this is a narrative that's been weaved many times. So are you reweaving it in a better way? Are you saying something different in this particular documentary that hasn't been said before? Like, why should people go attend your screening for your film?
Yeah. So, John, I've been fighting abortion since I was about 18. Really since I was a fetus, because my mom was pregnant with me while leading a pregnancy center. So, I've been a pro-life activist.
I didn't know that. Wow.
I was a fetus. Yeah. My mom was directing a pregnancy center in her late 20s in Los Angeles County before she got married, and then continued to after she got married and I was the firstborn. So I've been swimming in these waters quite literally for a long time. So I'm aware of all the projects you're talking about. There's MAFA 21.
Yeah.
That's the one everyone thinks of. That's more of a history of sort of racism and Black genocide. And so it touches on Planned Parenthood and Sanger, but it touches on other issues as well. It's incredible, by the way. It's incredible. It's a bit older. And so there's not as much sort of 21st century animations and artistic bent that unfortunately you have to get the attention of young people today. Okay. I'm telling you, it's a wonderful documentary. I would never say anything negative about Moffat 21. It's just, it was a long time ago. And then, so we wanted to make more up-to-date animations and really sort of, high quality film for the 21st century. And beyond that, most people in the church, John, actually have not learned much about that. They hear the claims, right? They like Margaret Sanger inspired Hitler, you know, or it's like, okay, well, can you like back that up or, you know, prove that? Or you get the conservative Christians on Facebook, right? Who are like, Margaret Sanger had a board member that was a KKK. It's like, no one brings any like history or proof or receipts to back these things up. And then the only other major project would be George Grant in the late 1980s, who published the book Grand Illusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood. And then later he published a small biography on Sanger called Killer Angel. And if you're listening to this and you listen to John Harris regularly, you probably know the name Dr. George Grant. John, I found almost no one does today. And so I am answering your question. I'm taking longer because I think it's really,
it's
really
fine.
Important.
It's fine.
To answer your question with a lot of power, because we're living in insane days, and I'm 32 years old, John, and I don't know how this happened. I do. It's a God thing, but I'm saying I don't know how this happened, but I've spoken to more pulpits on Sunday mornings, not to share about my ministry. I'm talking like to preach for 50 minutes. I've preached in more pulpits in the last 3 years on the issue of pro-life and the unborn than anyone in the world. That I'm aware of. I don't know how God has opened these churches and opportunities to me. I feel kind of spoiled. I feel really honored. I'm not a pastor. Okay. I didn't go to Ed Stetzer Seminary, Talbot. Sorry. I'll talk about that another time.
I thought you might take a shot, but that's okay. Yeah, there you go.
Megan Basham's coming to my show next month, finally. And it's about time I have that a long overdue conversation with her and have her just bless my listeners with what she knows and what she's revealing. Anyways, I digress. So I didn't get an MDiv. I went to Westmont Santa Barbara. I'm a religious studies major, but I didn't do higher education learning. But I read a lot. Okay. Probably not as much as you, but I read a lot. And I found that the church in America today doesn't know very much about those warriors and heroes of the late 20th century that was doing the work on some of these issues that I am now. The how did we get here questions, right? The ideas have consequences, bad ideas have victims questions, mm-hmm. right? The exposés on cultural Marxism and the sexual revolution. You know, you got the Francis Schaeffers, obviously, but I found that almost nobody knows who Dr. George Grant is. He's become a friend, an advisor to me, and a mentor, and he's actually the one featured the most on screen, other than myself, in this film, The 1916 Project. And so nobody has taken Dr. George Grant's work from the late 80s and early 90s and kind of presented it on a digital silver platter for the next generation. At one point, Grand Illusions, John, was the best-selling book in the pro-life category ever at one time. And most people I meet don't even know who he is. And George Grant's probably the smartest human I know and that I've ever met. And so it was really important for me to take his learning, his citations, his receipts, his proof, his research on the history of Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, and really present it to the next generation in this beautiful documentary, for all ages, but really to make sure we captured those significant pieces of how we got here, for my generation and the next generation. And so, what makes it unique? Well, one, I actually don't think there's been a project that's captured the disgusting, sordid history of the culture of death and the abortion industrial complex, in a sort of on a silver platter, all the disgusting pieces in one place, but in a way that's digestible with up-to-date animations and film and cinematography. So that was one reason. And then the second is, we don't just tell the stories of bad, evil people, John, and just do a historical throw up of like all these evil people doing evil crap for 50 years. Yeah. We finish with the stories of heroes. Of the heroes of the White Rose Resistance in Nazi Germany, who were fighting the same ideology and the same ideas. And by the time you watch the film, it's very clear to the viewer that it is the same ideology. It is the same philosophy. It is the same view of human beings that both Sanger and Hitler had, right? Sanger had more of a scalpel approach to eugenics, while Hitler had more of a sledgehammer approach to eugenics, but they believed the same things and they were animated by the same kinds of ideologies. And so we finished the film with the story of hope. And with the story of the heroes of Christian resistance to rebuild Christian resistance in America before it's too late. And so we can talk more about why did I do 1916? What is 1916?
Yeah,
why does
yeah.
it sound like 1619? But just to answer your first question, that's what makes it unique. And so we just did our red carpet premiere and we just kicked off our first church tour on June 14th. And now I'm going to, we're doing San Clemente, Atlanta, San Jose, Phoenix, Albuquerque, where else? Denver and a couple in Southern California. Yeah, they're all right there. So those are the mega churches that are having me out in person to screen it. But any church in America can screen it. And I might be able to zoom in live and chat with the pastor on Zoom after a screening, or one of my team can be there. But this is going to be huge. This is going to be massive. So we kicked off with Ali Beth Stuckey as my special guest a few days ago. And some of these screenings, you might see people like Brandon Tatum, David Harris Jr., Eric Metaxas, Abby Johnson, Dr. George Grant, Frank Turek. You might see some fun guests on the road. So,
all right. Sounds good. Thank you for giving us a full picture of what people can expect. So for viewers who are streaming right now, if you have questions, you can leave a comment on YouTube, Facebook. I believe you can also do it on X. And I will ask Seth as we go through some of the history and the message that he's conveying in this book and documentary. So the obvious question to ask first, before we get into any of the other history, is the title, because 1916, in fact, someone already in chat is asking, is this any relation to the Irish Easter Rebellion of 1916, which I'm assuming it's probably not.
No.
Okay. All right. So why 1916?
So I think it was another one of those cool moments of providence, John. I was with my team April of last year, so April 2023, and we were at a creative writing retreat to plan our big projects. And I was explaining this idea I had, which is the 1916 project. I just didn't have a name for it yet. And I was explaining this project, and my chief of staff said, you know, what you're explaining sounds a lot like the New York Times 1619 project, but like the right way, like the good version. Like it sounds like the 1619 project as it should have been if the New York Times wasn't filled of gay communists. That sounds like what you're explaining. And so I paused, and then I had that moment of revelation, and I freaked out and I said, guys, Margaret Sanger opened her first clinic in 1916. That's the event that was this sort of massive spiritual, political, and cultural stake in the ground, to which we can trace most of the evil junk unfolding before us at such a rapid rate in America, John. And so let me prove that. Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in the world. They're also the largest provider of that pornographic comprehensive sexuality education in the public schools, bro, that's bringing all those angry mama bears and papa bears to school board meetings. And if you watch John Harris, guys, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I mean, we're talking like gay sex cartoon drawings and anal. And let me just stop there. It's basically they leave no sexual stone unturned because they believe that, like Kinsey, that children have sexual rights. And so if they have sexual rights, then they also have the right to all of the information that comes along with exercising their quote unquote sexual rights. Every groomer and pedophile believes this. It all goes back to Kinsey. We reveal that in the book and film as well. Well, guess what? Planned Parenthood claims on their own website, John, that they're the largest provider of comprehensive sexuality education, which is not about the birds and the bees. It's one of the liturgical arms of the religion of humanism. It's libido dominandi. Sexual liberation is political control, and we have to sexualize the next generation, break down their innocence and mores first, and then they'll be easier to control. Oh, and by the way, then they'll have a ton of sex, which means they'll probably need abortions. So, Planned Parenthood, largest abortion provider in the world, largest provider of that porn sex ed in the schools, and bro, as of last year, I have a leaked memo from Planned Parenthood, admitting this to one of their own.
Really?
That they are now the second largest provider in America of cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers. So how is it that one organization, John, is all three of those things? The largest provider of baby killing in the world, the largest provider of porn that calls itself sex ed in America's public schools, and they're now almost, they're almost the largest provider of chemically castrating drugs for America's gender-confused youth. So what are the major issues in the culture right now that have parents and godly lay people, lay Christians, like, concerned? I would say probably, let's see, transgenderism, killing babies, and the sexualization of children in America. Are those not the three? Yes, we can talk about critical race theory and some of this other stuff as
well. Yeah, yeah.
And medical apartheid, and we can talk about COVID, and we can talk about, but the three major issues are those three, are those three issues. All the Democrats are saying that 2024 is going to be a referendum on abortion.
That's
and
right.
So I think we have to go like, well, then how the hell did we get here? And so then here's where it gets interesting. When I realized it's 1916, not 1619, I then realized that it was the disciples of the 1619 Project that tried to cancel the legacy of 1916. Let me say that again. It was the disciples of the 1619 Project that tried to cancel the legacy of 1916. And here's what I mean by that. In summer of 2020, after, you know, during the mostly peaceful, somewhat fiery BLM arson riots protests, you had the canceling of anything that the liberal establishment claimed was racist. You remember this, John, right? Aunt Jemima. Remember all the things we had to cancel? And you had all BLM, right? And which was, I mean, by large mansions, you know, BLM and Candace Owens exposing all the fraud and how that money was actually used. Anyways, they go do these shakedowns of corporate America or institutions or companies that maybe in some way BLM can say, you know, back in the heritage and history of your company, you had a racist, right? Or you did some racist things, or you disenfranchised black Americans. Mm-hmm. And so silence is violence, you know, shut up, do the work. And you gotta do something to make up for that racist heritage. So give us a ton of money, right? Or we had to cancel all these people. Okay. Well, it was in that heated cancel culture, BLM, Marxist environment of 2020 that the revolution started to eat its own. John, you're the real historian in the room. It's not me. You're the real historian. You know that revolutions always eat their own. And so in July of 2020, BLM put Planned Parenthood in their crosshairs. It was one of the least covered news stories by conservative news media, in my opinion, in a long, long time because of its significance. And then what did they call those riots in 2020? They called them the 1619 riots. Remember this? People dubbed them the 1619 riots because they're saying it's because of the legacy of 1619 when the first black slaves come to American shores. They said that should be America's birthday. You know this. They said not 1776, 1619 should be America's birthday. And so then they started saying we got to cancel anything that's racist. And then it was the disciples of the 1619 Project and BLM that said in July of 2020, Margaret Sanger was a racist. And a eugenicist. And this is hilarious, John, because conservatives have been saying this for decades.
Yeah.
And they ignored our critiques and attacks. They whitewashed their witch. They defended her. And I mean, Barack Obama got the Margaret Sanger Award, guys. Nancy Pelosi got the Margaret Sanger Award, for goodness sake. Kamala Harris has been featured, but still has yet to secure the Margaret Sanger Award. But they canceled the Margaret Sanger Award. And in July of 2020, because of pressure from the pro-abortion Marxist left, Karen Seltzer, the director of Planned Parenthood of Greater New York, said, "We're done making excuses for our founder and the damage that she did to communities of color." They called her a racist, and then they took her name off of their flagship Manhattan, New York City, Sanger Mega Center. It was called the Margaret Sanger Health Center. They took her name off the building. They said she was a racist. And then New York City, where, you know, Sanger got her beginning, John, they had the Margaret Sanger Square on the corner of that Margaret Sanger Health Center.
Yeah,
the city got rid of the sign called the Margaret Sanger Square. So the city canceled Sanger, Planned Parenthood canceled Sanger, their patron saint. And we're supposed to go about, John, like nothing just happened. This is one of the most interesting news stories in decades because I could show you New York Times articles, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, Washington Post, Democracy Dies in Darkness for decades carrying water for Margaret Sanger. And then they canceled her. So this leads to a very interesting question. What was so cancel worthy about her? Because you defended her for decades. And now out of nowhere, what changed? What's the real story? behind the patron saint of feminism and one of the largest 501c3s in human history, Planned Parenthood. If they've lied to you about their patron saint, what else are they lying to you about? Hmm. And so in 1916, Margaret Sanger opens her first clinic. That is the beginning of one of the largest, best-funded, and most profitable 501c3s in human history, the largest abortion provider in the world, the largest provider of porn sex ed in the schools, and the second largest provider of chemically castrating transgender drugs for America's gender-confused youth. Yeah, it's not 1619 that explains our current cultural moment. It's 1916, from which we can trace most of the rot unfolding before us in America.
Yeah. Good presentation there and framing of the whole issue. It's interesting because I was down there. I live like 2 hours north of New York City, and I was with some a pro-life group or anti-abortion group that was doing some sidewalk counseling and prayer outside that clinic. And this was back, a few months ago. It wasn't that long ago. And I remember walking to the clinic, and the guy who was taking me goes, "Oh yeah, they just changed the name of this not long ago because of the connection with racism." And I had a famous Christian historian. I will not say his name, but I remember he had emailed me when the same thing I think happened in Boston. It was in another city in the Northeast where they had taken down, I don't know if it was a statue or a plaque, but it was something honoring Margaret Sanger. And he thought, hey, this is great, actually. Like, maybe we should reevaluate some of our history and stuff. And I remember my first thought was, I get it. As far as, Sanger's a bad person. We've been trying to expose, eugenics wasn't good. The progressive movement wasn't good. And a lot of things that now modern liberals and leftists think are somehow acceptable, or institutions that we're still with, that they're still operating in, they're out of sequence. They're out of touch with some of the foundation. And so it's a battle I think we've wanted to see. At the same time, though, I just think it's ironic that she, let's just say, murdered and set the tone to murder millions and millions of people, like a genocide that Stalin could not have even imagined. And yet it's because she said some insensitive things about Black people at one time that were what does that say about us? Right.
No,
like,
that's right.
Like that's ridiculous. What she said about minorities it is nothing compared to the havoc that she has unleashed.
I make that point in the chapter one of my book. And you kind of made my point really beautifully. I almost wish I had quoted you instead of me. You said that beautifully, John. But I make that point in chapter one of my book. I said, basically, they acknowledged in 2020, John, that the roots were racist and bad, but the tree would continue to grow unfettered. Is basically what they said, right? Mm. Like, she was a racist and super evil, and she harmed communities of color. But also we murder more Black people every 14 days than the KKK lynched in the century.
Yeah, that's
so we're going to continue growing and watering the tree that she planted. But we've acknowledged that the roots are bad now, but nothing will change. Okay, America? That's basically what Planned Parenthood said in 2020. And here's the irony, right? Here's where it gets funny. By the way, what's that saying? If the left didn't have double standards, John, they wouldn't have any standards at all. And it's like, ha, 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 ha. It's so funny. We all see how true that statement is. But let me just bring a little bit of kind of rigor to that. What was sort of the philosophical basis of the 1619 Project? I mean, you probably know better than me as a historian, John. The claims of critical race theorists, right? As it pertains to the race issue, is that if something can be traced back to a heritage of racism, then you can't redeem that thing, right? That the seed is so bad that you can't change the seed. It has to be burned down. The thing has to be ripped out, actually, and everything rebuilt from the ashes. I mean, if you don't believe me, just read Ibram X. Kendi. Okay, just read the claims of BLM's website before they made it less inflammatory. Just listen to people like Alicia Garza, one of the co-founders of BLM. I mean, this is how these people speak all the time. Literally, the 1619 Project was called A New Founding. Don't you remember? That was the subtitle of the 1619, A New Founding. So 1776 isn't our birthday. Our real founding was 1619 when the first Black slaves came to Eastern Shores, because we're so racist and horrible that's our real birthday. Our birthday is racism. And so what did they do with the 1619 essays? Do you remember, John? They attempted to trace the legacy of 1619 to everything today, to medicine, to doctors, to the law, to police.
anywhere there's this disparity.
To black women's health, right? If black women are fat, it's because of racism. Yeah, exactly. Disparities equals inequity, equals inequality, right? That is what they did with everything. So they're acknowledging that you can't redeem a thing that's allegedly birthed in racism. The whole thing has to be rebuilt. To which I then said, now start with Planned Parenthood, right? We see the double standards, right? They're not willing to apply that same sort of ethos or belief to their own sacred cows. If what they believe is true in the 1619 Project, then Planned Parenthood has to not only be defunded, the entire company has to be shut down. Okay, John? And after you read my book and watch my film, you will walk away saying the same thing, by the way. If you don't believe me now, just go host a screening at your church right now or go pre-order the book. It's shocking, shocking stuff. Maybe in the next few minutes, I'll share a couple of those shocking things. But wait, are you telling me, John, that it was never about philosophical consistency? That CRT and 1619 and racism is just a cudgel used to hit their political opponents over the head, but they don't actually believe or apply any of their same premises to their same side of the political aisle? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And so this project and book kind of rips the cover off of the hidden history of the secular moral revolution. And here's the last statement on that, John. Again, why did I do this? Because I have not yet found a more powerful way to awaken the moral and spiritual intuitions of Christians and get them to live differently than explaining how we got here. I don't know if that's just our current cultural moment or if that's a God thing, but I've been a pro-life speaker since I was like 18. I've been speaking on stages since I was 19. I for years, I had a hard time figuring out how to get people to live differently. Like, okay, they went to their pregnancy center to volunteer and package up diapers. Okay, that's very sweet. But like, I'm talking about actually doing something in your community to stop the killing of babies. And so far, I have been able to mobilize thousands of Christians in Southern California. We've launched Love Life Chapter. Love Life is a dear ministry partner of mine.
That's who I was with in Manhattan.
Yeah, I brought Love Life to Southern California. But I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I love Justin Reeder and Love Life and the whole team. I would die on the field for them. I adore them. But before I launched my own ministry, I brought Love Life to Jack Hibbs, Pastor Jack Hibbs, and that became the first church partner for Love Life in the entire West Coast. I did a Love Life conference with 1,200 people at Pastor Jack Hibbs Church, and that led to dozens of Love Life church partners across Southern California. Like that's what I want people to, live differently and get involved. And so far, the most powerful way I've found to do that from pulpits, being a communicator and a speaker, is explaining how we got here. Giving the theological, but also the political and historical details behind the culture of death and what was the seed? What was the seed of that culture of death? How did we really get here? And so most Christians walk up to me after a Sunday, John, and this is really sad, but they say, Seth, I've never heard any of that before about Lothrop Stoddard, Madison Grant, Leon Whitney, Antonio Gramsci, Pete Buttigieg, who else? Ernst Rudin, Thomas Malthus. Most Christians have no idea about the sort of the architects of the culture of death and how much they wanted to replace Christendom with something fresh and new. Most Christians don't realize how regressive progressivism is. And once they see how spiritual and fundamentally theological that culture war is, John, they want to get involved. It's amazing. Like, I think post 2020 people are just more willing to fight because they see what time it is. And so I've just been blessed to be able to mobilize people like I've never seen anyone else do before. And Christians are hungry to act and they want to do something on this issue more than ever before. And so it's the sons of Issachar, actually, John. The men who understood the times, so they knew what Israel ought to do. Mm-hmm. That's the only line about the sons of Issachar in First Chronicles. But what's the flip side of that statement? If you don't understand the times, then you won't know what the people of God ought to do. We need men and women who understand the times we live in so that we know what to do.
Yeah, good word. So I want to get to some questions because we are almost 40 minutes in and there are people leaving questions. Some of them have some pushback in them, so I'll just pitch them to you. And then if we have time, maybe you can reveal some of those things that you talked about. And I have a million questions and things I'd love to ask, which we don't have probably time for. But Let's start with Anita Smith, who says many pro-life orgs portray the abortion mother as a victim. Thoughts? So, Seth, do you agree that the mother who chooses to have an abortion is a victim?
Yeah. So parents who kill their own children are not victims, as it turns out. But also, let's add a little bit of nuance to that. Okay. I'm not like some of the other pro-life organizations that say the woman is the second victim. And so when abortion is illegal, parents should never be criminalized. I do not believe that. I think that the law is a teacher. And if you don't punish those who kill babies, you'll never stop it. Making it illegal and then never punishing the lawbreakers. Turns out you're teaching the culture that you can break the law and nothing will happen. Okay. So I don't believe that, but also we do need to acknowledge, okay, that the abortion industry has been lying to women for a long, long time. Now some people will say, but Seth, eternity is written on the heart of man, common grace, the conscience, deep down women know what they're doing. They know it's a baby. Okay. I tend to agree with that. I think most women know that it's a baby. But I've also met enough women who are post-abortive, obviously being in this movement, John, who have said that, you know, they got an abortion at 4 or 5 weeks right after they found out they were pregnant, and that this was in the 70s and 80s, and they believed the lie. And I know these women well enough to know that they're not lying to provide philosophical cover for their sins. It's not an act to seek to justify the behavior. These are women who have repented and had to go through a lot of healing. But they say that they believe the lie at 5 weeks that it wasn't a baby yet. And turns out we weren't teaching very, very good embryology or the science of human development in public schools. Shocker. and that they just believe the lie and they didn't know. So we also can't say that that's not real. So I think some women have bought certain lies. A lot of people have been deceived. What's one of those lies? They say that abortion is 4 times safer than childbirth. Did you know that's like a super common phrase in the abortion industry? Planned Parenthood parrots that all the time. They say giving birth is 4 times more dangerous than ripping your child out of your uterus through an abortion. And so what are you teaching women? You're teaching them that if they have a high-risk, dangerous pregnancy, they should always abort. Because that's way safer for them than giving birth. So there are lies that have been very damaging. And so women have been victimized oftentimes by the abortion industry. But no, when you pay someone to kill your baby, or when you order poison pills online called RU486, which by the way came from kind of the Nazis, which I can talk about that, and you want to kill your baby, you're not a victim, okay? So we need to have love. We need to come rally around people. The pregnancy centers already do that. But abortion does need to be banned and made illegal at the federal level, and there has to be punishments for if you kill your baby, or else everyone will just keep killing their babies.
Yeah, good. So the next question is from Lynn, and she wants to know about your opinion of the ERLC and others' letters to Louisiana legislatures against making women liable for abortion, which that was goes back, I think, a year. Well, maybe more than that. Maybe it's 2 years ago now.
You probably know more about that even than me. But Brent Leatherwood is who C.S. Lewis meant when he said men without chests. Okay, let me just say that. That man is a pathetic excuse for a human and for a male. He should step down in disgrace, and he should apologize to his wife and children for being a coward and to the rest of the church that he led astray, and all of the SBC churches that tithe, to which allows the Southern Baptist Convention and the ERLC to exist in the first place, for betraying his constituents. That's what he should do. And why the heck was he behind trying to make sure the manifesto of the trans Nashville shooter didn't get released? What the heck is going on at the ERLC? Well, I can provide a little answer to that. It was led by Russell Moore. Okay, so bad seed, bitter harvest. Bad seed, bitter harvest. The ERLC is just reaping the harvest of the bad seed that they had through their president, Russell Moore, for years. Okay, so that was disgusting what they did. Why in the world would the ERLC oppose an abortion ban? It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So yes, did I speak clearly enough?
That's good. I think we're good on that one. Next one from, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Civisly Minded. The cancellation is so they can take, so I think she's talking about canceling Margaret Sanger is so that they can take her off the label as a cudgel for the right, and they can act like they agree. So
like they agree now. Yeah. So that I answered that already, right? She's racist. Well then if she is, do to Planned Parenthood what you insisted every other racist corporation allegedly should do in 2020, which is like actually get brand new leadership and replace everything, completely cancel the heritage. But notice they don't apply that to Planned Parenthood because they don't care.
I'll jump in and add this because I saw this before the show. I just took like 5 minutes. I wanted to I specifically wanted to look this up to see what Planned Parenthood was saying about Margaret Sanger and whatever legacy she had, especially on eugenics, race, Nazism, all those kinds of things. And they do have still on their website a fact sheet that is intended to answer the claims against her. And some of it, I think you mentioned before that there's people who will ignorantly go online for the pro-life or anti-abortion cause who will sometimes say things that just aren't, they don't square with what we know historically. And so I think Planned Parenthood likely does take advantage of those situations when we overstate our case, when we say things like, you know, Margaret Sanger, there's a direct line. She inspired Hitler. Well, not exactly. It's not like a direct line in the sense that like she was there rocking Hitler to sleep at night.
They weren't writing letters to me. That's a funny line. Yeah. Yeah. Let me be clear. Okay. There's no proof or evidence that Margaret Sanger ever exchanged letters with Adolf Hitler. There's no proof that they communicated and that he thanked her for founding the American Birth Control League, later renamed Planned Parenthood. But what if I told you this? It's almost that bad. It's actually almost that bad. Okay.
Well, I was about to say their eugenics program was modeled after Sanger, though. I know the connection. But.
Yeah, yeah. It goes really, really, really bad. Okay.
And, is it worse than that? Is it more close than even that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can give one or two stories right now, unless you want to do more questions.
No, that's fine. Really brief, yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'll give away this Easter egg. Okay. And by the way, if you really want the in-depth, if you're kind of like John and you like to research and study and know more, my book is only about 175 pages, but it has 220 or 30 citations because I wanted to make sure that I provided all the receipts to back up my claims. And so that you, the Christian who reads this, can back up your claims as well. And what I'm about to share with you, you can find proved and point to with the receipts in my new book. You can pre-order that book right now at the1916project.com. Don't go to Amazon, okay? They hate babies and they hate our beliefs. And so go to the1916project.com to pre-order your copy right now.
I appreciate that. So not to knock every author who uses Amazon, but thank you. So go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
So Margaret Sanger's first board member, one of her founding board members, like I'm talking like the first like board members in 1921 when the organization was founded, his name was Lothrop Stoddard, John. Lothrop Stoddard was a high official of the Massachusetts Ku Klux Klan. He was actually their grand wizard. So the founding board member of Planned Parenthood was the high grand wizard of the Massachusetts KKK. He wrote a book called The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. He wrote another book called The Revolt Against Civilization, The Menace of the Underman. The Menace of the Underman. His writings on eugenics were featured in German school textbooks. He was so influential on many high-ranking officials of the Third Reich that Lothrop Stoddard was invited to Nazi Germany in 1939 by the Third Reich. And he went. He met with Himmler. He actually had a brief meeting with Hitler. He met with Hans Gunther and Robert Ley. And he's the only American on record to have had a one-on-one meeting with Hitler after he rose to power. The only American to have been given that level of access to the Third Reich. And a one-on-one meeting with the Führer was the founding board member of Planned Parenthood, bro, okay? Then Hans Gunther, a German race anthropologist, and actually... one of Hans Gunther's books on eugenics was some of Hitler's prison time reading. Okay. So remember, he has his failed coup attempt in Munich and he spends 9 months in prison. And during those nine months, Hitler's poring over the writings of several of Sanger's very good friends, some of whom which he shared office spaces with, because the American Eugenics Society used to share office spaces with Planned Parenthood when it was founded. John, okay. It's like so gnarly. Okay. The history. So Hans Gunther, one of Hitler's henchmen and his favorite authors, referred to Lothrop Stoddard as one of the spiritual fathers of Nazi Germany. I have that citation. I have that German article where he referred to Sanger's board member as one of the spiritual fathers of Nazi Germany. The other man he called a spiritual father of Nazi Germany was Madison Grant, the co-founder of the American Eugenics Society, who wrote for Sanger's magazine, fundraised with her, shared office spaces with her, and spoke at each other's conferences. Madison Grant, whose book in 1916, bro.
Sorry, I accidentally Hitler hit that button. We'll get to that.
Hitler called his Bible. Okay. Yeah. So his Madison Grant's assistant, Leon Whitney, tried to get Sanger to merge her organization with the American Eugenics Society. He said, let's just make them the same company, the same organization. Leon Whitney's boss is Madison Grant. And one day they both got letters from Adolf Hitler thanking them for their writings on eugenics, one of which was Madison Grant's book, The Passing of the Great Race, also published in 1916, which Hitler called his Bible. And Sanger endorsed the Buck versus Bell decision, which was the mandated sterilization of those considered a threat to the gene pool in America, which the Nazis cited in their defense of the Nuremberg trials as if to say, you Americans were doing eugenics before us. So that's just a little bit of the
interesting. The history I didn't know
Planned Parenthood and the Third Reich.
Yeah, I didn't know about a lot of those connections, but it definitely sounds like there was some sharing of notes there on and a shared understanding of racial dynamics and you know, one of the solutions to what they saw as their problem. Anthony Faba asked a question, and this is related. Do you have to go soon, or
no,
how much
no,
time
no,
do you have?
Good, all right. Bro. Yeah.
We've been going about 50 minutes here, so I'm going to try to get through a number of these questions. Anthony Faba asks, so is this just a left are the real racist Nazis argument? So, I'm assuming you're familiar with that kind of line of argumentation and the people who kind of get sick of that. So what do you say to someone who's like, are you just trying to portray the left as the real racists or Nazis? And in so doing, kind of frame our side as like the anti-racist crusaders, the real anti-racist crusaders, and then kind of buy into the left's framing on this, or
right. I understand.
Go ahead. Whatever you have to say.
Something the right has done for a long time, right? It's because we're so sick and tired of being called racists. And then what this guy's referring to is that like that guttural response of like, you know, oh yeah, you know, then tell me about, you know, the Rockefellers and Madison Grant and Margaret Sanger. It turns out you're the real racist, right? And this whole like, you're racist. No, you're racist. No, you're racist. I'm kind of sick of it too. So no, that's not what this is. I just followed the evidence where it went. And so G.K. Chesterton's best friend, Hilaire Belloc, has this really good line. He says, to comprehend the history of a thing is to unlock the mysteries of its present, and more, to discover the profundities of its future. In other words, we don't study history purely to know what happened then. We study history to understand what's happening now and what will continue to happen moving forward if nothing changes and good people don't stand up. To comprehend the history of something unlocks the mysteries of that ideology now in the present. Bad seed, bitter harvest. That's a biblical concept. Obviously, as a pro-life organization, John, and as a pro-life activist and speaker, obviously, I want to expose the sordid, disgusting history of Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry, but it was always bigger than that, right? And this is why many people actually get upset with me saying, Seth, you need to stay in your lane. You know, why are you talking about other cultural issues? You should just stay in your lane and try to save the baby. Well, but the culture doesn't work that way, John. It's not like you can stay in the pro-life lane and just say, we love babies and we shouldn't kill them. Okay, praise God, we all love babies. But that's not how the architects of the culture of death operate. It's not how the liberal establishment operates. And it's not how the culture war works in America, where everyone just stays in their cute little lane. And what's proof of this, by the way? Planned Parenthood. They're all like, in 2020, they're all talking about how they're in bed with BLM, Black Lives Matter. They're all in bed with the trans stuff. Turns out the cultural revolutionaries who created this culture, John, don't stay quote unquote in their lane. So much of the staying in your lane approach to Christians has actually hamstringed us and it's hurt us because we're not understanding how the culture war operates and how our opponents see their role in the culture war. And so, yes, I understood we needed to do the history of Planned Parenthood, but it was never just a history of Planned Parenthood. It was the history of the attempt to turn over the standards of an entire civilization, to tear down Christendom and replace it with something new. These people were all cultural Marxists, okay? They were all atheists. They all hated God. Margaret Sanger once said, John, that the marriage bed is the most perverted thing in the social order. I mean, this woman hated marriage.
Yeah.
She hated the Catholic Church. She hated Christians. The mast of her first magazine said, no gods and no masters. So did I go into this just to say, you're the real racist? No, of course not. But I just followed the evidence. And when you see the history of the sexual revolution and really what we should call the secular moral revolution, it was not a movement of Christians. It was not a movement of conservatives. Of course, you always had your useful idiots, right? Your Mitt Romneys and stuff. It was a movement of secular, progressive, atheist, God-hating Marxist revolutionaries. And they told us what they were going to do. And they did it, John. And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things, too, I figured I would mention this and maybe get your take on it. It's not one of the questions in the list, but since I'm hosting the podcast, I get to ask my own. One of the things, and I understand that connection to the Nazis, which it's there, right? It's there. And the left needs to
give you a lot
that.
More, too.
Oh, I'm sure. The thing is, though, that there's I could probably set up for you, and maybe you've already done this in the book, so you can talk about that if you have. But you could set up all the civil rights leaders and you could show all the nice things they said about Margaret Sanger and how she inspired them. You could talk about how Du Bois was on the advisory board for Planned Parenthood, the Negro Project. I mean, and this is he is viewed as one of the big, proto civil rights kind of leaders, Black Power leaders. And so, there is this and it might even be a stronger or a since it's American, a larger group of people that you could potentially point to say, look at all these quote unquote civil rights guys who all seem to like Sanger up until 2020. Even just the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons and stuff, they're all praising Margaret Sanger. So that's also present there. And there's also disconnection, I would think, between Nazi Germany and Planned Parenthood in the sense that like Hitler, he was what you talked about with the eugenics is totally there and abortions and stuff. But Hitler also wanted to cancel some of the sexual degeneracy because he thought it was bad for Germans in Berlin. So like the first, by some accounts, the first transgender surgeries were in Berlin in the Weimar Republic. Right. And Planned Parenthood seems to have taken a different, so it does seem like it is a complex story, but you can see strong inspiration for what the Nazis did in eugenics, inspiration flowing into the civil rights movement. I don't know if you have anything to say about that complexity, because I'm wondering if that's what that question was kind of getting at, was like, hey, it can't just be like a one-on-one, like, Planned Parenthood, Nazis bad, which is like how I think a lot of conservatives have tried to portray it. It's like, well, it is bigger than that. Like there's a lot. And you said even Marxist, which that's not fascist. So like there's a progressivism component in this. So like choosing 1916, I guess I have to get to a question here. I'm making my points, but getting to 1916, that's the genesis of something super. And this is, I want to see if you disagree with this. In my mind, super liberal. Like it is the manifestation of this two things: autonomous, my body, my choice. I can do whatever I want. You shall never limit me in what I want to do. And a baby's not going to hang me up because I want pleasure. Right. So this autonomous man, I am God. And then I see that as like a big overarching thing. And then number two, and the government should enable me to pursue that. So I want to see what you think about that, because I see that as like the big thing we're still stuck with from the Planned Parenthood progressive era, Margaret Sanger stuff. So,
yeah, well, it's not either or, it's both and. But the history of the secular moral revolution, and I'm talking about the really influential people, right? The people that we might call the architects of the culture of death today, which, by the way, there's a whole book called The Architects of the Culture of Death. It's a very good book. Sanger has a whole chapter to herself. Kinsey has a whole chapter to herself. But Hugh Hefners, the Alfred Kinseys, the Mary Calderones, the Margaret Sangers, some of the other men, the American Eugenics Society, All of these people shared very similar beliefs. Okay. And there's probably three I can name off the top of my head. Not everyone is fit. Okay. So there are people that are, they're better. Actually, they're just better people. They have better genes. We should have more of those people in America. And we should have less of the people that we call unfit. That's very so that's eugenics. Okay. It's a very common belief system of most of the revolutionary progressives of the 20th century whose fingerprints on today are very easy to trace. A second belief would be if it feels good, do it. Have a ton of sex. And you don't want a baby to hamstring your lifestyle. So Sanger's first publication, it was called Woman Rebel, John Woman Rebel, and with the headline, No Gods and No Masters, actually. She said that our ultimate objective is unlimited sexual gratification without the burden of unwanted children, end quote. There you go. The first publication by Sanger. Is that not a statement that represents the entire culture today? I want to do what feels good, and I don't want to be held responsible for my sexual choices. And that third belief system, probably shared by all these progressives, would be a hatred of Christianity and the church. Along with that would come this belief in sort of this occultic Gnosticism, right? This sort of like that this your body's kind of a prison for the soul, and there's this bifurcation, there's this like difference between a body, and the person and the soul, and that eventually brings us to gender theory, and actually their support of abortion as well, because they say that the baby doesn't have moral characteristics yet in the uterus that ground personhood, so it's a body but not a soul, and that's Gnosticism again as well. So I found that those are kind of probably the sort of the demonic trinity. If you had to pick three, that unites most of the leftist revolutionaries of the 20th century. So it's not either or, it really is both and. But yes, again, there are nuances in terms of progressivism and eugenics. And that's the thing about eugenics, right, John? It's hard to kind of pin down because it always shapes and shifts, right? Whoever the power class and elite are, they tend to kind of define what are those characteristics that we believe are the Übermenschen, right? The Superman, the superhuman. And what are those characteristics that define the Untermenschen? Right, the subhuman, which, by the way, I forgot to say, they got that phrase subhuman from Lothrop Stoddard's book, The Menace of the Underman. So Sanger's first board member, he wrote The Menace of the Underman. Alfred Rosenberg, the Nazi Party's chief racial theorist, appropriated the German term Untermensch in the German translated version of Lothrop Stoddard's book about the threat of the underman. That's the first time we see the phrase subhuman as to refer to the Jews. So yes, you heard me correctly, Christian. The Nazis got the phrase subhuman from Margaret Sanger's first board member.
It seems to me, and that is fascinating, it seems to me that one of the major things that's shifted, and it is a big shift, is that the people holding us back, the underman, that this has become, instead of based on a Darwinian kind of genetic frame, is now based on more of an idealistic critical theory kind of infused social power dynamics frame. And so, right. You know, the people who are holding us back now are not the racial minorities. In fact, they have a wisdom to share with us because of their oppressed experience. It's the white Christian males, right? They're the ones that are really, so it's like the class has changed as far as it's like the finger shifted from we're pointing at them to now we're
point. You just kind of prove my point. Eugenics is very hard to nail down because it's always shapes and shifts. Turns out when you don't ground morality and objectivism in God's order, John, it becomes a little bit difficult to figure out how it operates. It all seems to be chaos, huh? Funny how that works. And
Isn't that the truth? So
to your point, John, what are they doing now in America? They're doing the same thing, dude. You think it's a coincidence, Christian, that Planned Parenthood is sterilizing children through cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers? Why do you think that's a coincidence? Planned Parenthood was birthed out of the sterilization eugenics movement. Mm-hmm. Margaret Sanger once said, "Eugenics without birth control seems to us a house built upon the sands. It is at the mercy of the rising streams of the unfit." End quote. So that's a verbatim quote. I memorized these disgusting things for you. So she said, "I'm a eugenicist, and we're trying to build a house called eugenics, right?" But she said eugenics without birth control is a house built on the sand, which, by the way, she's using a biblical metaphor there, bro. The house built on the rock and the house built on the sand. So she said, I'm a eugenicist. I'm building a house called eugenics, actually, but I'm building it without birth control. And so it's a house on the sand. So I have to build my rock solid house of eugenics on the foundation of birth control, which, by the way, is a coin sheet is a term she coined. Margaret Sanger coined the term birth control. And she didn't mean helping poor black and brown women plan their parenthood. She meant birth control. We want to control what kind of people are birthed. Birth control was a tool in the eugenicist movement. And she celebrated the sterilization laws in America that led to the forced sterilization of over 70,000 Americans between California and New York in the years following the 1927 Supreme Court decision, Buck versus Bell. So Planned Parenthood has been in bed with all the sterilize the poor people for ages and ages and ages. So why do you think it's a coincidence that they're now sterilizing people? Yeah. Through chemically castrating transgender drugs. They're doing the same thing. And now today, the left is smearing Christians as what? The real threat to freedom and democracy. Well,
and in this frame, you know, homosexuality is it's a great thing. You can do whatever you want and you don't actually produce any offspring from that relationship. So it's like, you don't even have to do the eugenics because you're not producing anything.
Well, that's why Kinsey, John, was an advocate for every form of sexual acts except heterosexual intercourse, because Kinsey was also a eugenicist, and he didn't want unlimited reproduction by those that he didn't like. So it's interesting when you look at some of these sexual weirdos of the 20th century. It's like, oh, you were literally a cheerleader for all forms of sexual experimentation except God's way. And so anyways, there's a lot of crossover between all of this, but yeah, eugenics always rears its head with a different mask, if you will. And so today Planned Parenthood is doing the same thing. The left today is doing the same thing, except now, as you rightly pointed out, they're now saying that the real heroes of the Republic are the people that they used to discriminate against, right? The minorities, the poor, and anyone that can trace a history of victimization. But it's like, well, but you guys were the people behind victimizing those same people. So now they're saying that those people are the heroes, and it's white Christian males or female Christian males that are the real threat, which kind of reveals what they've always believed. They hate Christianity, they hate the church, and they want you to go away. And if you won't go silent into that good night, maybe we'll set up Bernie Sanders' re-education gulag camps again. And I'm actually kind of not kidding. Jordan Peterson's going through a digital kind of re-education he's being forced to do right now for saying things that are not politically correct.
I haven't heard about that, really.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Our evil top hat that's probably 20 years ahead of us.
In Canada.
Changes in America. That's right. In Canada, he's being forced to go through re-education. And so my question for American Christians, John, is how much longer until that digital required re-education is set up in a physical camp called a gulag again? And why would you believe that could not happen again, by the way? Why would you believe that? There's a pro-life gal from DC that just got 4 years and 9 months in federal prison. And bro, next month in July, John, next month, Gabe Wrench is going to go speak there in Nashville, the Nashville 10. The federal government's pushing for 10 to 11 years for allegedly blocking access to an abortion clinic door by singing psalms and hymns out loud. Why would you think they wouldn't continue to widen the net of the kind of Christians that they go after for opposing the secular moral revolution and standing for righteousness and faithfulness in the public square? This stuff is happening really fast.
Absolutely.
And we can trace it as part of the same movement the entire time.
I do think, and if we had more time, maybe we could talk about, you know, how IVF, you know, build a baby is factoring into this. And
I would love to.
So, absolutely. You know, HR, we have a gulag at every place of employment that's major. It's called the HR department.
I was about to say that.
So
yeah.
It's in our modern, you know, we think we're so enlightened. We don't have gulags. We don't have slavery. And it's like every major store you buy clothing at has sweatshop labor. Look at your iPhone. Like, it's just, we are so arrogant and we don't realize most of the things we complain about from the past, we are doing that thing and far worse.
Yeah.
It's just, we don't hear the screams. We've insulated
ourselves. Wow.
Anyway. All right. Let's get to some of these questions. Cause I know we're over an hour and I probably got to land the plane, but so this is some pushback. And there's a number of comments like these from abolitionists. So I'll just do this one. Ask him, that's you, Seth, if you didn't know, why you refuse to openly speak in support of specific bill to abolish abortion in Kansas, where you're currently living. So I guess you're in Kansas. Why aren't
you?
Yeah,
we moved here a couple years ago.
I have no clue with the context of that, so I'll let you.
I have called for the abolition of abortion at the federal level for years. And so I have supported it because I've been telling people we need to abolish abortion. To be perfectly honestly, John, some of your listeners don't like me and I don't like them. I'm sick and tired of being told by some of the immediatists that love T. Russell Hunter. I'm sick and tired of being told that, what have some of these people told me? They delete all these comments, by the way. T. Russell Hunter is like deletes his stuff, his old comments, and then he refuses to repent for it. And then he says, show me where I said that. And it's like, well, dude, you deleted it. Like, but Samuel Say and I have talked about this. Okay, we remember when he was saying these things. Hey, Seth and Scott Klusendorf, they don't want to abolish abortion because they'll lose their speaking honorariums, to which I say, screw you. All my honorariums go to the ministry, every church, every conference, it all goes to the ministry. I don't even take those anymore. I believe abortion needs to be banned at the federal level. So does AJ Hurley, who's been called nasty, horrible things by many of the immediatists on the Jeff Durbin, T. Russell Hunter side of the aisle. By the way, I have a ton of respect for Jeff Durbin, ton of respect. I haven't met him myself, but some of these guys have just turned out to be total a-holes and jerks. And I wouldn't even want to be your friend, actually. I spend my entire life trying to wake up the church to abolish abortion. I moved my family to be closer to family so we could be healthier with how much I'm traveling, birthing this ministry. I've called for the criminalization of abortion for years on the stages I spoke at, back to when I was like 24, fresh out of college. I was giving talks and I would say that it needs to be banned and there has to be a punishment. What's wrong with a law that says if you kill an innocent human being, there's penalties and you'll be punished? And yet these people have continued to say that I don't support abolishing abortion simply because I'm willing to take incremental victories if you don't have the votes for an abolition ban, right? Or an abortion ban.
I just want to make sure the question's answered. So are you saying that on the federal level, you would support an abortion ban, but not on the state level or both?
Well, you have to do the states to get to the federal level, right? We don't have a Congress that's going to ban it federally. Yeah, we need is it 38 states? You're the historian. Is it 38 states for a constitutional amendment or 42, John?
I don't know off the top of my head, actually. For like a convention of the states I don't think, because you could do it through Congress or you could do it through a convention of the states. And I don't think a convention of the states thing is going to happen that's a whole nother thing. But I can't remember.
Yes.
I think it's
every state needs to ban abortion. The church needs to wake up and ban. I've been saying this. I don't know if these people don't listen to me or to my podcasts, but I've been saying states have to ban abortion. Even before Roe v. Wade got overturned, I was saying that it's moral to ban abortion at the state level. Although I have said in the past that I wasn't sure if that was going to lead to civil war and the federal government going to civil war with a state that was abolishing abortion with a governor who signed it before Roe v. Wade got overturned.
Yeah,
I've raised concern before June 24th, 2022 about how that would work. But I've always believed it's the moral thing. And now with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, there are no excuses to ban abortion on the federal level. So anyways, I'm sorry that I answered it that way. But bro, I've been told that I do this to make money off the blood of babies.
That's terrible. Yeah.
And that I don't want to actually ban abortion. You know, Seth Gruber, he secretly doesn't want to ban abortion, actually. And why? Because I disagree with some of the immediatists that an incremental victory is better than no victory, right? Whereas they believe, no, and I'm not misquoting them. Okay, some of them tried to pivot what they believe in, but Jeff Durbin, T. Russell Hunter, these guys have been clear for years. If it is not a ban with no exceptions, and if there's a rape or incest exception, if there's anything like that, John, it's apostasy. I've been told by immediatists, it's apostasy for the Christian to vote for it. They should be under church discipline if they vote for it. It's an abomination before the Lord, and I have to repent, they've told me, for supporting an incremental bill if I don't have the votes for an abolition bill. And if you believe that, you're an idiot. And if you think I should be under church discipline, go ahead, call my local church here. I live in Kansas. Go ahead and call my church. It's called Ottawa Bible Church. Go ahead and call them and go ahead and have the senior pastor put me under church discipline, okay?
All right. Well, that was clear. I wanted to say you are right. We were both right, actually. It is 2/3, so 38 states, not three quarters. And that's both in Congress and on the state level. But more importantly, maybe just briefly here, but some people who aren't aware of this disagreement between some, and I don't even know if it's all quote unquote abolitionists, but some organizations and what you're doing and Like they just, and I have felt this way for a while, kind of like, okay, why are we talking about this? Can't we just all get along? We all want to end abortion. Do you see a way for this, these disagreements, these very strong disagreements that exist in the anti-abortion movement, to be somehow maybe put to rest with the greater common enemy, or is this just going to be with us for a while?
No, it's going to be with us for a while. As long as, and listen, like, let me say it again. I want to be as careful as I can. I have so much respect for Jeff Durbin. That guy's a warrior, and I don't see him saying as much of the stuff as the T. Russell Hunter and Free the States crowd have said for a long, long time, John. But like you said, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's basically like, should we only abolish abortion and accept no other kind of incremental victory legislatively? Or should we take some incremental victories if that's the only win we could have in that moment on our way towards total abolition? But now, there are some people who call themselves incrementalists, and there are people who feel like they're in a pro-life establishment and not a pro-life movement. Huh? There are like right-to-life groups and other pro-life groups where it's like, well, why would you oppose the abolition of abortion at the state level? Why would you oppose that, right? Like that ERLC question. Like, there are pro-life organizations who have opposed that, John. And you're like, wait, what? Right. So there right. are people who we
it's
should
like a lot of them. Condemn. Yeah.
And we should call out. It's like they seem to be functioning more like what these immediatists think about me. They seem to be functioning as if they don't want to abolish abortion because they'll lose their job. You do see pro-lifers sometimes act like that. That makes me sick. And I want to call, and we call those people out anytime that we see that. So there are people like that, right? But that debate is going to stay with us because the radical immediatists, John, let me be very clear, believe that I and my entire organization are in unrepentant sin. Okay, I'm using the words they use. I know it sounds intense, but it's actually the words they say. They believe that I am in unrepentant sin for supporting an incremental approach, even though I'm going to push for the abolition bill, for the abortion ban. But if you don't have the votes, then let's save some babies right now. So if they believe I'm in unrepentant sin... The debate's not going away.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Switching gears here, getting off the abolitionist topic real quick here. Sabaton 288 says the eugenics program Sanger goes back to the Theosophical Society of Helen Blavatsky. It is openly occultic of a Gnostic sort. Do you know anything about that? Because I know the King of England right now, King Charles, is he is Theosophic as well. And I understand a number of elites adopt Theosophy. I don't know how tight the connections there are, but maybe you know more.
Yeah, I have done some study on the Theosophists and the Theosophical Society, and there actually is some crossover to Margaret Sanger and some of the kooky sexual revolutionaries. There's a great book that exposes actually quite a bit of this in a book. It's a book called The Seekist Circle. A humanist revolution. And I did a 4-part series with the woman who wrote it. She's in her 90s now. It was one of those books that kind of exposed it all, right? Right, John, like all those dirty secrets of the sexual revolution in the 70s at the time. And you're like, oh, wow, this woman did her research. And I did a 4-part thing with her on my podcast. If you guys go to my YouTube channel, called The Mom Who Exposed the Sexual Revolutionary Cabal in 1976. And that's when she published her book in 1976. And so, yeah, there is I can't speak too much to it, but the Theosophical Society had actually operated the Temple of Understanding. It was this futurist building in Washington, D.C., and it was designed to resemble the sun with 6 rays. Supposedly housing the religions of Buddhism, Christianity, Confucianism, Hinduism, Judaism, and Islam. And so the supporters of this Temple of Understanding that was run by the Theosophical Society called it a spiritual United Nations. Right. So you kind of get that globalism,
very
right?
Ecumenical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so it was interesting assisting in the operation of this Temple of Understanding was the United Lodge of the Theosophists in New York, which used funds donated by the Lucis Trust to operate the Temple of Understanding. And the Lucis Trust also maintained the UN's meditation room. But the Lucis Trust had a forerunner called the Lucifer Press that published the Lucifer magazine, John. So Lucifer magazine was the official voice of the Theosophical Society led by Annie Besant in 1891. Who changed the name to Lucifer Magazine and then later changed the name of that magazine to The Theosophist. And so there were a lot of these weird, kooky sexual revolutionaries like Sanger
who had membership at the Temple of Understanding and kind of who rubbed shoulders with some of these sort of demoniacs. So that's a little bit that I know about that. But yeah,
turns out there's
a lot of weird occult stuff, John. Turns out there's a lot of weird occult stuff too.
Well, I had no clue they had a temple, you know, in DC and stuff. So you know a lot more about it than I do. All right, let me do this. There's two more questions I want to get to, and then I'll just give you the last word and we'll land the plane since we've been going for over an hour and 15 minutes, though. I want to just get back to this real quick because, and I know it might be an uncomfortable thing because we already talked, I already asked you this question, but the abolitionist account wants to say that you dodged the question. So I'm going to let you answer that, whether you specifically, I guess, support, and there must be an individual bill in Kansas to ban abortion that there you didn't support enough or something. So I don't know if you want to, you don't have to, but if you want to address that, you can, and then I'll get to one last question.
Okay. I support the abolition of abortion. I have recently moved to Kansas. I've got to know the AG. I'm doing all that I can to get to know people here. I travel 9 to 10 days a month on the road, and I have 3 children under 7. We recently bought our first house. I'm a member in my church, which I sadly hardly ever get to attend because I'm on the road trying to wake up the church around the country. I try to memorize the legislative bills on abortion all around the country because I have to speak in these states that I come into keynote banquets to speak at churches. So I have to know about the legislative landscape of the states that I'm speaking in. And I have called for the abolition of abortion at every state level. Apparently, I didn't speak clearly enough to Kansas on my podcast. And so now I'm a heretic and unrepentant sin from the immediatists who didn't support it. Do you have 3 kids under 7 and travel 10 days a month on the road and have your kids tell you, please don't go on another work trip, Dad, as you leave the house? I'm very tired of being attacked by these people when I'm trying to do what they're trying to do, ban abortion at the federal level.
I just want to give you an opportunity.
Can't make these people happy, John. So
yeah, I just want to give you an opportunity to respond. Yeah.
Call my church, put me under church discipline.
Yeah, no, I got it.
Russell Hunter will be very happy.
All right. I think we had closed that chapter, but I appreciate it. All right. So
yeah.
Last question here that I want to get to is let's just do this one because it can flow right into promoting this particular documentary. Can you please leave a link to the 4-part series you mentioned, Eureka Hope? So you talked about a 4-part series. I'm trying to.
That's right. I'll send it right now.
Put it on my
YouTube channel. We recently rebranded my podcast from Unaborted to the Seth Gruber Show. But here is part 3, and I'll drop it to you right now. This is just the one I found by Googling it. But I think we've linked all of the other ones. So. Okay. 4-part we did on my audio podcast and on YouTube, and I think it's on Rumble as well. Each conversation was anywhere from 25 to 50 minutes, 4 parts. Really interesting, detailed about kind of the Sikhs, the sex ed revolution, Planned Parenthood, some of the communists, some of the World Health Organization stuff. It's a really weird, crazy history. There really is a hidden history. And it's a book, the author I interviewed, and it's called The Sikhist Circle, A Humanist Revolution. And Sikhist was the Sexuality Information Education Council of the United States, founded by Mary Calderone, Planned Parenthood's medical director, with seed money provided by Hugh Hefner, with a board member who was a pedophile. And so that's the history of the sex ed.
Okay.
That's where all of the comprehensive sex ed comes from. And so she wrote this book in 76, exposing the more global humanist revolution that was animating the founding of Sikhs, which became one of those sort of like cultural linchpin organizations of that time, and how the left was sort of seeking to upend the culture.
Yeah. Well, there's a few encouraging comments. Sharon says that she loves Seth Gruber. One day for $4.99. Thanks, thanking me for the faithfulness in ministry, and
amen.
And there's some other comments in there also of support. So, call to action here. You know, what do you want people to do? Obviously, we showed the website before that they can go to, which is 1916. I've talked about it like hundreds of times. Well, it's like ingrained in my mind.
You have a wonderful audience. You have a wonderful listener base. There's so many faithful Christians that I meet around the country who say they love conversations that matter. It's really inspiring. Okay. I have so much respect for your voice and your courage. And frankly, you've been one of those kind of
watchdogs of Big Eva before people had a phrase to describe Big Eva. I mean, I encourage you guys to go back and listen to some of John's old episodes, like what happened to Tim Keller and what happened to John Piper, your coverage of Al Mohler, Russell Moore. So some of the stuff you were blowing the whistle on before people knew that a whistle needed to be blown. And so I just so appreciate you, bro, and your audience. And so if you guys want to host this screening of this film at your church, I'm telling you, most believers you meet probably have no idea of some of the claims we expose. And the book, I really provide all the receipts. So go to the1916project.com. And if you scroll to the bottom there, John, you'll see that people can watch the trailer, but they can also press the button at the bottom of this landing page that says host a screening. If you press host a screening and fill out the form, my team will get back to you. We drop ship you a box, and you can literally pull off a screening at your church anywhere in the country between now and September before the film is released online for the world later this year. Although we'll probably still let churches do screenings after the film comes out online. And so we want thousands of churches screening this. We're on pace to reach thousands of churches screening this and would love to have your support. And we'll get a rep for my ministry to be there if we can, or I can zoom in live and chat with people and the pastor after the screening. So this is to mobilize churches to launch White Rose chapters all around the country, to get the church back engaged. And if they don't understand the culture of death, they're not going to know what to do. And so we tried to provide this educational film and piece to do that. And then the book. So the book, you go to the1916project.com/book. So the same website, but /book. Okay. And you can pre-order the book right now. And thank you for pulling that up. I appreciate that, brother. And the subtitle is The Lying, the Witch, and the War We're In. And so it's really the lies that created this culture, the witch who mainstreamed those lies more than anyone else, probably in the 20th century. Margaret Sanger, John, is probably the most influential leftist revolutionary of the 20th century. Probably her impact on today's culture of death is probably greater than any other revolutionary on the left in the 20th century. And the book is really for those even more hungry that want to know. If you want the receipts, if you want the proof, and if you want to learn more than I could put in a 75-minute documentary, pre-order the book. Like we said, pre-order it from us and not Amazon. Okay, don't give your monies to baby killers and people that fund it. And it ships September 4th. So host a screening, pre-order the book, and we appreciate everyone's support. I think, John, you and I sense that if something doesn't change soon in the culture, maybe the next 5, 10, 15, I'm not sure, years, things are going to get really, really, really dark in America. Hey, we win in the end. We've read the end of the book. Praise God. The Lamb is victorious. The Lion of the tribe of Judah is on his way. But hey, gosh, can we not kill the babies? Can we preserve the innocence of children? Can we give God a reason to maybe show America mercy? And if we don't deal with the child killing and the sexualization of children, I do not think that there will be renewal and revival in America. I don't think God will pour his spirit out on America again unless we deal with these issues. And so this is a small little piece attempting to wake up the church. So, yeah.
Well, brother, thank you for all your hard work, Seth. Do you get any sleep ever?
Not too much, but being on the road is difficult, but we've been taking
it so hard
with us a little more often. I used to not take the family, but now sometimes we take the whole family and we stay another day or two in the city that I was speaking in to spend time just having fun in the city that we're staying in.
That's great. Yeah. So, well, it is a lot of hard work. I do not travel nearly as much as you do, and I know, and I don't have three younger kids either, so for me it's not as big of a commitment, but even for me, it's like, I feel disconnected from my church and it's really hard. So it's a big sacrifice that you're making. And I'm glad to see that it's bearing some fruit and you're seeing a lot of success and growth, and may God continue to strengthen that. So God bless.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate your voice, bro.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.